In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Christ is risen.
He is risen.
This is the last Sunday of Pascha, so that's the last time you hear that on a Sunday, but we have the apodosis of Pascha Tuesday night and the liturgy Wednesday morning, so you get to have one last taste of it if you can come to those services. In the gospel reading that we just heard, there are a lot of truths that we could talk about. It's a long gospel reading. On the surface of it, you might think it's a simple story about Christ healing someone and then the Pharisees being unhappy about it, but there's a lot that could be said about this gospel. But I want to talk about just a couple of truths today. First, this gospel illustrates how hard those who don't wish to accept the truth are willing to fight to resist it. St. Paul talks about this in regards to pagans in Romans chapter 1. He says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth and unrighteousness, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has showed it unto them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were they thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their hearts were darkened." So what St. Paul is saying is that there really are no atheists in the sense that there are people who believe that there is no God. There are people who call themselves atheists and pretend that they don't believe in God, but they are suppressing the truth in unrighteousness. And there was an interesting study that was done in Europe several years ago that sort of illustrates the truth of this empirically, and that's they put up lie detector equipment, they hooked them up with these gadgets, and they started asking atheists to pronounce God's curses on themselves and on their families. Now, if you were an atheist, that would be like someone asking you to read Batman's curses or ask Batman to curse you. You would say, well, that's ridiculous, but sure, I'll read this piece of paper, and you wouldn't bat an eye. But when these people began to read these things, they became very uncomfortable, which what that goes to tell you is that they know that there's a God, they just don't want to admit that there's a God. And why don't they want to admit that there is a God? It's because believing that there is a God requires that you change your behavior, and they don't want to do that. They want to continue doing what they've been doing. But you might think that we're just talking about pagans here, but you would never see that among someone who is a believer. But clearly, you see in this gospel reading that even people who are outwardly religious, outwardly believers, can resist the truth. For one thing, the Pharisees thought that it was all about keeping the law. And on one level, the Pharisees, the way they started heading in this direction, you could say there are some praiseworthy elements to it, because if you go back and you read the book of Maccabees, you see that when they were under Greek rule, you had these pagans that tried to erase the worship of God. They tried to erase the worship of the temple. They forbade people from keeping the Sabbath. They forbade people from circumcising their children. And people died to keep the law. And people fought for the right to be able to worship God as God had instructed them. But the thing is what was the Old Testament law all about? The purpose of the Old Testament law was not to be an end in itself. It was not to just say, okay, I checked all the boxes. I observed the Sabbath. I circumcised my sons. I kept the various feasts. I made all the sacrifices that I was supposed to do. The purpose of all of these things was to draw them closer to God, to come to know God better. But they made it an end in itself because that's the easy part. It's easy to do certain things and check boxes. But when you actually start getting closer to God, you realize that there are things in your life that you've got to change. And that's the hard part, working on yourself, working on what you need to do differently. Now, we could sit back and say, well, that's just those Old Testament Jews and the Pharisees we read about in the Gospels. We Orthodox don't have any such problems. Well, I'm afraid that you do encounter people in the Orthodox Church that make the things that we do an end in themselves. And that's not to say that the things that we do should be taken lightly. the traditions that we have are meant to be observed. And all of these things are for our salvation, but they're not ends in and of themselves. As Christ told the Pharisees repeatedly, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And these Pharisees were so hung up on keeping the letter of the law, not just the letter of the law, but they sort of put, like you think about the edge of a cliff, if you wanted to keep people from going off the cliff, you might put a fence about 6 feet away from the fence to make sure that people didn't get close to the edge of the cliff. And that's the way a lot of Jewish customs were designed, to make sure that you not only didn't break the law, but you couldn't even get close to it. And so, for example, threshing wheat on the Sabbath would obviously be a violation of the Sabbath. But they got on the disciples of Christ because one day when they were hungry and they were walking past a wheat field, they grabbed a hold of some stalks of grain and they rubbed them in their hands, blew the chaff so that the chaff would separate from the wheat, and then they ate the wheat grains. And the Pharisees said, oh, you're breaking the Sabbath, because that's technically threshing wheat that you're doing there. And obviously, the purpose of the Sabbath is not for us to starve to death. And also, as Christ pointed out to the Pharisees, if you had an ox or a donkey that was in the ditch, you wouldn't leave them in the ditch and say, well, I can't do anything about it today. I'll have to come back tomorrow. And you would feed your animals on the Sabbath because you didn't want them to starve to death. There were certain things that you were allowed to do. And even in the Maccabean period, there at the very beginning of it, there were Jews who were keeping the Sabbath secretly, and the pagans found out about it, and they attacked them. And these people said, well, you know what? It's better for us to die keeping the law than to break it. So they wouldn't even raise their fingers to fight back. But the other Maccabeans said, look, if we follow the examples of our brothers, we're not going to have anybody left. And so they said, look, if we're attacked on the Sabbath day, we're going to fight. There are exceptions to the rules. And so we don't want to be so focused on keeping the letter of our traditions that we ignore the purpose of the traditions, although we don't want to be like people on the opposite extreme that just blow off these traditions. Another thing that we see in this gospel is how people who despise the truth, by their resistance to the truth, they shine a light on the truth. The Pharisees were trying really hard to debunk the fact that a miracle had taken place, and so they questioned the man about it. And then they got his parents to see, is he really your son? Was he really born blind? So all of these questions that they asked, they simply made it clearer what had taken place. And yet, they still resisted the truth, even after they had verified everything they had said, because they had already made a decision to reject Christ. Another thing that we see here, though, is that although the blind man was no match for the Pharisees, he didn't have an education because he was blind, and they didn't have Braille back in those days, so he wouldn't know how to read and write. But a man who has experienced God's grace in his life is never at the mercy of someone who has an argument. That doesn't mean that you will be able to argue with, you know, a scientist on the in the area of their expertise. But when you have someone that says there is no God, when you experience God, you just know that that's not true. If you were the blind man and you've been blind all your life and Christ had opened up your eyes and you were able to see, you might not be able to respond to all the arguments that are being made. But like the blind man, you say, well, one thing I know, I was blind, but now I see. When you've experienced God's miracles in your life, you may not know everything. You may not be able to argue with all the scoffers and skeptics that are out there, but you know what you know. You know that you've experienced God and that He's real. Truth can take even the humblest man, and He can make him like a lion in such a case, because if you stand firm in what you know, you can't be budged. But falsehood makes even smart people weak. It makes even smart people foolish. We have people in our society, when you go back to Romans 1, we're talking about people suppressing the truth and righteousness. I sometimes wonder if there's people who are in some central committee somewhere who are just making stuff up and thinking, now I wonder if people are going to go along with this. But a lot of these people really believe this stuff. And you ask someone, can you define what a woman is, for example? There was someone on YouTube I saw that was going around asking people on a college campus, Can you define what makes someone a woman? And you can see these people like deer in the headlights, because suddenly they're thinking, now, is this a trick question? If I say something, I don't want to be thought as being, you know, transphobic or anything like that. So most of them wound up saying something along the lines of, well, I guess anyone who identifies as a woman is a woman. And so they should be treated like a woman, apparently. Okay, well, if I identify as the King of the United States, does that make me the King of the United States? Do you have to treat me like the King of the United States? Because if I can do that, I've got some plans, you know, that I'd like to put into action. But this is just simple foolishness. And the fact that so many people around us have bought into this stuff just goes to show that if you suppress the truth, if you reject God, you turn your back on God, that God will allow you to go in that direction. He will give you up to your foolishness. In Romans chapter 1, St. Paul says, professing themselves to be wise, they became foolish. And at the end of this chapter, Christ said to the Pharisees, because the Pharisees heard him talking a little bit after the gospel reading was read, and he said, so you're saying that we are blind? Because he was talking about spiritual blindness. And Christ said, if you were blind, ye should have no sin. But now ye say, we see, therefore your sin remaineth. The point is, God gives grace to the humble, but he brings down the proud. And if we approach life in an arrogant way, then we will be blind to the truth. But if we come humbly to God and we seek him with all our heart, we will come to know him, and he will illumine our hearts with the light of the truth. Christ is himself the way, the truth, and the life. And if we want to know him, we have to walk in his way. We have to submit to the truth of his teachings, and we have to live the life that he has called us to live. And if we do this, he'll show us the way that we should go. God will enlighten us with the truth, and we will have life, and we will have it more abundantly. Amen.